Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. How are we to survive as a species if we insist on destroying the world we love? This is the very big question that Eve Ensler poses in her new play OPC, or Obsessive Political Correctness, which is on stage now, making its world premiere at the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge. The play also asks whether the Democratic Party is still a force of progressive change.
One of the dominant themes is this split, I think, that exists between the kind of radical progressive left and the more moderate Democratic Party liberal left. What is the Democratic Party and what is the function? And is how different is the Democratic Party than the Republican Party? And is it one big, huge corporate conglomerate now that is really controlling everything?
Eve Ensler is best known for her one-woman show, The Vagina Monologues, which she's performed around the world and which gave rise to V-Day and 1 Billion Rising and a movement to end violence against women. We talked to Ensler recently about the intersection of art and activism and about her new play, OPC, which tells the story of Smith, a mainstream liberal running for the Senate, and her radical dumpster-diving daughter, Romy.
The candidate of Smith, who is running for Senate of the Democratic Party, really believes that the way to tackle things is within the system and by addressing issues through power relationships. And I think the daughter, Romy, who's a freegan and a squatter and is living off the grid, has a very different perspective. Mm.
Tell us what, because I don't think everyone knows what a freegan is, but I'm really intrigued.
Freegans are people. There's a movement of freeganism, which is really based on looking at overconsumption and waste and the fact that so much of what we throw away isn't garbage. And I think there's a statistic in the fact that 80% of Americans only use their things twice before throwing them away. Mm-hmm. It's a movement that believes not squandering, in generosity, in recycling, in reusing. And many freegans do digs in the city where they pillage through the garbage and they look at how we can live off what other people are throwing away. I did digs and I went out and I was absolutely astonished and horrified.
Really? So you actually participated
in this? I did.
Yeah. Oh, what did you learn? I mean, what did you see? What astonished you?
Well, I have to tell you, my first dig, I came home and I just cried because there's something about spending as much time as I do traveling the world and seeing the hunger of people in other countries and how little people have. And how much we throw away in this country, how much gets disposed of for no reason. You know, like if there's a bunch of bananas and there's one rotten banana in the bunch gets thrown mm-hmm. away. One of the issues of the play is looking at overconsumption, how it is absolutely feeding into the rise of CO2 emissions, how capitalism feeds this idea of growth.
Yeah, it's one of the values that we seem to take for granted that has to happen, right? We've got to keep growing no matter what. But
exactly.
It seems like that has... Yeah, where does that take us?
Well, I think Romy's position in the play is that she has no interest in growth, that there is maybe are other verbs like to make or connect or to love or to share or to, like, maybe we're done with growing. Maybe growing is an old paradigm idea.
Yeah, so I was reading, you said the play asks the question, and I think this articulates a lot of what you've been talking about really well. How are we to survive as a species if we insist on destroying the world we love?
I think it's a crucial question of our times, you know, and I think... What happens when you're awake to the world is another very big question of the play. Is it sanity or is it madness? You know, is somebody who is feeling everything and seeing everything? I think in a lot of ways in our culture, we see those people as crazy people as opposed to visionaries. Even if we can't change everything, at least we can begin to create another way of living in systems of values that reverse the situation we're in now.
I'm interested in the sort of family dynamic that you've laid out a little bit, and I know you don't want to give too much away, but I was really intrigued by this idea of the split in the left in this country right now. Do you see that as a central thing that has to be resolved, that we're struggling with?
Oh, absolutely. And I think where I am now, and having worked in V-Day and 1 Billion Rising for the last almost 20 years, I really believe in grassroots movements. I really believe we need to be in the streets. I really believe we need to be much more in your face right now. And I think the Democratic Party and the kind of systems that are constructed seem very much like the media, seem very much like Hollywood. They're all corporatized. They're all within this corporate bubble and controlled by corporate demands and corporate needs. And I think we are the only solution at this point, people. If we don't push the edge right now, if we don't develop another idea outside the system or a new vision of how we look at capitalism and either deconstruct capitalism or revise capitalism or re-see capitalism, we are not going to be here much longer. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
I'd love to talk to you about the way you represent in so many ways the sort of intersection of art and activism. And you've talked a lot about that. And you're best known for writing and performing the Vagina Monologues, which has been sort of described as a piece of activism. It's also a piece of art. And you've sort of made the comment that sometimes it's unclear where those intersect or if they can sort of exist together. And I'd love to ask you about that. Can they exist together?
Well, I think everything we do is political. Yeah. You know, Adrian Rich once said, the moment a feeling enters the body is political. And I think Audre Lorde writes about it very well in this wonderful essay she has called The Uses of Erotic, where she says this binary or this false dichotomy between art and activism is really very patriarchal, that somehow we see them as separate, like you can't have a poetic gunrunner or a meditating revolutionary. I don't see them as separate things. I think what is tricky is when you want to write about a political issue is how to do it in a way which isn't didactic or so polemical that people feel beaten up over the head by the issues and it's you, the writer, speaking as opposed to your character speaking. And I think, you know, having been a writer for a while now, I have learned and am learning that humor is one of the great ways of kind of delivering ideas without it feeling ideologically unbearable, you know, or where you're just being enveloped by somebody's.
That's really interesting, because I guess if you can get people to laugh, you're sort of opening them up a little bit. Sort
exactly.
Of getting them to reveal their soft underbelly.
Absolutely.
And taking an idea.
And yeah. I think when you're laughing, ideas can enter you in ways that you're not even aware of, you know, and I think irony is a great tool.
Yeah. I want to ask you, speaking of a political issue, and it's something, I mean, it's apropos of what we're talking about because you've done a lot of work around this, and that is oppression of women. It's in the news a lot. We've been doing a lot of coverage on sexual assault on campus, that sort of stuff. What does that tell you about where we stand with this particular issue in this particular moment in time?
Well, you know, it's very hard to tell whether we're having victories in the sense that so many more people are coming forward now.
Yeah.
To talk about being raped, to talk about being assaulted, or whether more people are being assaulted. I think it's probably the first. You know, I don't think people were always talking about violence in the media, certainly not 20 years ago when we started, or the 10 years before that. I think we're seeing lots of resistance on college campuses, lots of organization, and at the same time, we are seeing violence against women in huge numbers. So what is it that has to change? And I know I've been saying this a lot, but I think until we bring up boys differently and until we change and transform our notions of masculinity or what it means to be a man, we are going to be up against this forever. We bring up our boys to be totally disassociated from their hearts. We teach them not to cry. We beat the girl out of them. That all leads to this violent culture.
You know, again, this just gets to the core of your message, your art, your activism. In 2002, the New York Times published a profile of you with a headline, Eve Ensler Wants to Save the World. And I later found out that that headline sort of frustrated you.
Well, there was a snarky tone in that article that frustrated me. I read an article the other day, Naomi Klein is a dear friend of mine, where they accused her of being maddeningly optimistic. Now, first of all, Naomi is the most conscious person of the data. You know, This Changes Everything is an extraordinary book, which is documenting and outlining every piece of data around the disastrous situation of climate change right now. So there's nothing about her that is maddeningly optimistic. What she is saying is, if we build people's movements, if we unite, if we look at the issues I'm outlining in this book, there is a possibility that we could turn things around. And I think there's a cynical, snarky attitude towards anyone in this culture who believes that it is possible to unite people, to create solidarity, to build movements, and to transform our lives. I'm okay with it now. I mean, I was younger.
Why is that? I mean, I think you've put your finger on something so powerfully troubling right now, and that is this ease with which we embrace or go to cynicism versus optimism.
Well, optimism, or shall we say, activism,
yeah,
requires you to take responsibility. nihilism lets you off the hook, right? If you believe it's all over, if you believe there's no point, then you don't have to do anything, right? We protect ourselves with nihilism, don't we? But by the way, it's no protection. Because even if we're nihilistic, if this world ends around us, we're still going to be disappointed. Do you know what I mean? There is no protection from that disappointment. So I say, why not go out believing there's the possibility that we can do something to look? You know, 20 years ago, when I started doing the vagina monologues, you couldn't say the word vagina on television. You know, they did a 10-minute piece on CNN on the vagina monologues and never used the word.
Really? They never used
it? Never used the word. So now we see vagina used everywhere. And guess what? Many more women are in touch with their genitals and their body parts and feel agency over them. They know how they operate. They know how to give themselves pleasure. They know how to look. And I'm not taking credit for that, because many, many women have been a part of that movement. But when I started, people were like, you can't do this. You can't talk about it. What better life than to break taboos, break out of the box, make an attempt at shifting the way we see things and feel things and know things? And I think the answer is, when there are people around you who are trying to engender life, it brings up something in you which you've pushed down, which I think is very terrifying.
Last question, and I want to come all the way back to obsessive political correctness, your new play, OPC. So the chief characteristic of so much of your work is that it calls people to act, it encourages people to act, it urges action. What action do you hope comes from OPC, from this new play?
I hope the play inspires people to examine, obviously, their practices, their consumption, their relationship to waste and things and garbage, but also to see themselves as a player in the story, to see themselves as someone who actually has the power and the potential to change the world around them. And I think sometimes people say, oh my God, it's so huge, it's so enormous, there's nothing I can do. But the way the world changes is in your community, in your family, in your own life, whether it's you not using plastic bottles, or whether it's you making a decision to work at the battered shelter, or whether you reaching out to the homeless people in your neighborhood and figuring out how you're going to get them support so they can transform their lives. We all have the power to transform our world. That's one of the lessons of the play. Like, you know, our time is short here. This is the beginning. And I heard someone say recently, the times that are coming are going to make the 60s look like the 50s. And I think that is my biggest dream.
All right. Well, a great dream to leave us with. Eve Ensler, thank you very much. What a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. You too. Thank you very much.
Eve Ensler's new play is called OPC, or Obsessive Political Correctness. It's on stage now at the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge through January 4th. There's more information on our website, radioboston.org. And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.